I'm starting to care for you.
This is Mountain News and World Report, WMMT's weekly sojourn into life in Central Appalachia. We now invite you to join us for a visit with folks you may or may not know, items of interest to us all, and shining moments in our living history.
Hello, and welcome to Mountain News. I'm your host, Caroline Rubens. In this edition, we bring you a range of stories, past and present, about some of the joys and challenges of life in Central Appalachia. First, WMMT's Sydney Bowles brings us a piece about the struggle for clean water in the coalfields. She explores the water issues faced by residents of Wyoming County, West Virginia, in relation to mountaintop removal mining in the area. Then she brings us a story about a recent game night hosted by the Big Sandy Safe Zone. This show wraps up with two pieces from the WMMT archives. Both were produced during the Appalachian Media Institute's 2007 Audio Lab, during which Central Appalachian youth set out to record sounds and stories of their lives in eastern Kentucky. The first is called Aunt Carol, and the second is Bluegrass Loving Girl.
Jason Walker peers into the 1,000-gallon water tank that sits in his backyard.
How's it looking
today? It's actually pretty clear.
The tank is lined with bright green algae, and at the bottom there's a pile of sand. This tank is where Jason and his mother, who lives next door in rural Wyoming County, West Virginia, have been getting their water after mountaintop removal mining started nearby.
The coal mines at the top of the ridge up here, they let off a blast around 2 o'clock, 2:30. My windows will rattle, my dishes will shake. You'll actually feel the blast. The coal mines at the top of the ridge up here, the mountaintop removal, they let off a blast around 2 o'clock, 2:30. My windows will rattle, my dishes will shake. You'll actually feel the blast. I think that where they're setting off the dynamite and the aftershocks is what's loosening up contaminants, dirts, anything that's in the ground that's around our well is filling our well up with settlement.
Mountaintop removal mining uses explosives to blast off mountaintops and expose coal seams. Toxic particulates are released into the air, and excess material is dumped into valleys, disrupting ecosystems and releasing chemicals into streams and groundwater. People living near surface mines have long suspected the practice was to blame for health problems ranging from asthma to skin conditions to cancer. A growing body of research supports those suspicions, but an advocacy group's new report draws attention to the ways that science has been suppressed and how the cost of dealing with the health risks has shifted from industry to community. Sarah Sadoun of the international organization Human Rights Watch authored the report.
For me, the bigger question is not whether we should be mining coal or surface mining at all. The question is how we make these decisions as a society. Are we considering all the evidence and all the costs that are borne by the people who live around these mines?
Sadoun found that the mining industry had a role in the 2017 repeal of the Stream Protection Rule, an Obama-era regulation that would have blocked surface mining within 100 feet of a stream. When Congress considered the repeal, Sadoun said, lawmakers relied on industry-funded research that overestimated the economic cost the rule would have. For Jason Walker, the cost was steep. Walker is 31. He works delivering newspapers and at an auto parts store. He and his mother live about half a mile downhill from the mine.
Maybe about 10 to 12 years ago, our water started turning terrible. The color, the texture, the smell was ungodly.
In the past few years, the Walker's well dried up completely. Now, they drink and cook with bottled water, and for everything else, they pump and treat water directly from the stream. A stream, Walker says, that sometimes runs black with runoff from the mine.
Beggars can't be choosy. You gotta catch the creek at the right time. When it's clean, clear looking, or clear, because whatever you pump whatever the creek looks like is what you're going to pump into this tank, and then it's going to pump right into your house, and that's what you're going to use. I mean, it's so hard, especially like now it's starting to be wintertime, until I can either afford to buy, have somebody come and drill me a well, or I still have to do the same thing I'm doing now. Wintertime, last winter, when we had about 8 to 10 days of below 15 degree weather, I was out in the creek with a hatchet trying to get water, breaking through the ice. That's not a joke.
Welker has been diagnosed with Crohn's disease, a chronic inflammation that researchers have linked to elevated iron levels. Before the well dried up, West Virginia's Environmental Agency tested it and found high levels of manganese and more than 25,000 parts per billion of iron. The EPA recommends a limit of just 300 parts per billion. In 2016, Walker and several nearby families sued Dynamic Energy, the company operating the mine they blame for their health problems. They lost that suit and an appeal. Lawyers for the families couldn't prove conclusively that pollutants in the stream and the wells were the result of the Dynamic Energy mine. Indiana University Bloomington environmental health professor Michael Hendricks spent years researching the health effects of mountaintop removal mining. He knows how hard it is to prove causation in this field. But after 13 years of research, he feels confident there's more than just a correlation.
Even after, over and above, any effects that are due to smoking or age or insurance or poverty or education and others, there's an independent, significant effect of living in mining communities that contributes to poor health.
Proponents of surface mining have cast doubt on Hendrick's work, even going so far as to finance research that yielded opposing conclusions.
As more studies were coming out and the evidence began to gain more visibility, they would critique the studies in one way or another, and they would often say that we didn't control for smoking or poverty or other variables when in fact we did.
The highly respected National Academy of Sciences had assigned a panel to provide some answers on mining's health effects. But in August of 2017, the Trump administration's Interior Department abruptly canceled their work, an unprecedented move that raised questions about the coal industry's influence in the Interior Department. An influential member of Congress aims to find out why the work was canceled. Arizona Democrat Raul Grijalva will take control of the House Committee on Natural Resources, which oversees the Interior Department. A spokesperson for committee Democrats told the Ohio Valley Resource that Grijalva does intend to look into the cancellation of the study when his party takes power. Back in Wyoming County, Jason Walker has a more immediate concern.
I really want clean water. It's not a whole lot to ask for either. It's really not.
It was just getting dark as people began to gather at the Mountain Muse in downtown Prestonsburg. Attendees shrugged out of their jackets and stacked piles of board games on the tables. The event was game night, the inaugural gathering organized by the Big Sandy LGBT+ Safe Zone.
The rules are you do what the card says.
It was a small group. About 10 people showed up. But for the event's organizer, it was a success. Kyle May started the Big Sandy Safe Zone about a year ago.
We did a poll to see what kinds of activities people would be interested in, and game night was actually the top choice for people. So as of right now, the Big Sandy Safe Zone doesn't own any games, and what we did was we asked the community to contribute and bring games to game night, and we ended up having quite a few options to play tonight. So I think that game night would have been able to last even more than 2 hours because we had so many people interested in coming and bringing the games to contribute.
This comes after Pikeville Pride this fall, where scores of LGBTQ Kentuckians and their allies gathered for drag performances, live music, and dancing. Still, LGBT people in rural eastern Kentucky often feel isolated. The Big Sandy Safe Zone aims to give them a place where they feel at home.
I would say that we're trying to be as inclusive and welcoming as possible. We even had, you know, people who were with the church community come to our last board meeting to let us know that they were affirming and welcoming to the LGBT community. So we're welcoming to all walks of life.
The plan, says May, is to one day have a physical location to host events and offer resources to the LGBT community. But until then, the Mountain Muse has opened its doors to the group. Heather Owens owns the Mountain Muse.
We are at the Mountain Muse here in Prestonsburg, Kentucky. And it's kind of a little shop where we have fudge and candies and local art and vintage goods and all kinds of fun stuff. Kyle approached me back when he first got the idea to start the Safe Zone, and because a lot of places weren't open for him to have the initial meeting.
By the time game night was wrapping up, it got pretty rowdy.
Oh, Ariana Grande! Almost married Ariana Grande. Ariana Grande!
Harry Styles?
No.
What?
Not SNL. Not Mac Miller.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, that guy.
Afterwards, attendee Nolan Sloan, who's 17, gave his report.
That was absolutely terrific. It was a really loving environment, and it was great.
Yeah, what was the best part for you?
The aggressive charades. That was definitely the greatest. I think it's really good to know that in Eastern Kentucky we do have spaces like that, because that's something that I think a lot of queer folk in Eastern Kentucky don't think about, is the amount of support that we can and do have. It's just, it's good to know that even if your family doesn't accept you, there is a family waiting for you.
May says the Big Sandy Safe Zone has big plans for more programming and services in the coming months. For WMMT, I'm Sydney Bowles.
This radio story is brought to you by Appalachian Media Institute.
Here in the mountains, we face many hard times, from mining disasters to drug problems, and family is the only thing that you can really count on to pull you through. Every day after school, my Aunt Carol would get me off the bus, and we would spend the evening baking in her kitchen. To me, she is Aunt B, Mrs. Claus, and Betty Crocker all in one, but even better.
I'm Carol Begley. I'm 57-year-old. I have 5 kids and done a lot of cooking. That's really when I like to cook the best, when I can cook a lot of stuff at once. Yeah. Holidays, just even when my kids is home.
Come home from school every day, we had a good hot cooked meal. She got up every morning and made me breakfast.
Some of my Aunt Carol's recipes are her own, and others were from the people who have passed through the hills of Eastern Kentucky. But really, I don't think of Carol on her own, but as the other half of my Uncle Cecil. He was the type of man who could be content sitting on his porch drinking a cup of coffee and always giving thanks for what he had. He especially gave thanks for my Aunt Carol's biscuits.
Cecil wanted me to learn to make biscuits, and I wouldn't, because he would have made fun of me. If I didn't do them right, he'd have made fun, so I wouldn't do it. So my sister-in-law come down, Faye. She said, I'll show you how to make them a simple way. So she showed me how, and I made them. He was gone hunting. When he come home, I had him ready. Had him some biscuit and gravy. And he started eating, and I told him I made them. He thought I was lying. You didn't make these. So he thought Faye had made them. He thought we was trying to trick him. But he ate them, and I finally convinced him that I had made them, and I never did get a quit after that. He liked them so good, I never did get a quit.
He would always act like Ernest T. Bass was his favorite thing, and he would make fun of rolling up cigarettes and just usually be normally talking to him, and he would be doing a funny dance or do a funny jerk. He would always, if somebody come to his house, he would offer him something to eat, like something that he didn't have. He'd say, would you like, you want us to go in there and make you a steak or something? And if you said no, thank you, he'd say, well, good, because we ain't got it anyways. But he was a real funny man.
Cecil was diagnosed with a brain tumor, the doctor informed the family that there would be a time when he would need 24-hour care. However, unlike most who would have made plans to place their loved ones in a nursing home, my Aunt Carol took on the job, and to me, she became his angel on earth.
Took care of Dad 24/7, stood by his bed, she talked to him, she kept his bed clean. She kept him neat, shaved. She matched his little clothes, his little pajamas. She got up with him all night long. If he even made one little sound, one little cough, she always got up and took care of him. She learned how to do feeding tubes and take care of trachs. And she had a very, very lot of responsibility. She took very, very good care of that.
Not many teenagers would want to stay home and bake or sit on the porch all day, but I want to be just like my Aunt Carol and Uncle Cecil, because they use the simplest things, such as love, cooking, music, and most importantly, God, to keep their family close. And that seems like something that's getting harder and harder to do.
I was raised in a large family, having three sisters and a brother, and I always had somebody to play with. So, I mean, we were never bored, and I always remember spending a lot of time as a family doing things with Mom and Dad and just enjoying herself.
Dad loved his grandkids. He might even love them more than he loved us. He got that place over there at Mill Branch for his grandkids because he always wanted to raise us up over there, but we didn't get a chance to do that because Dad never had the money. But he was very, very tickled. He loved his grandkids better than anything. He taught mine how to work. He would help Keith, help him work in the garden. When he was two, he'd shovel cow poop. He'd plant onions, potatoes. He taught Keith to pick up. He'd make him pick up cigarette butts out of his yard. And now, to this day, Keith still, he's a worker because of Dad. Dad taught Keith a lot.
Carol and Cecil are two very special people in my life. Whether it was Cecil's funny impressions or Carol's cooking, they could always put a true smile upon your face.
Papa used to talk about the young days when he and Mama first were settled there. He spoke about the love of the mountain that he and Mama shared together there. Now a bright moon is shining in the valley, an old wagon named...
This radio story is brought to you by Appalachian Media Institute.
Today I rushed home from school, which had been let out early due to a huge downpour of snow. I was so excited about tonight. It was the night I had waited for all year. When I got home, snow had covered my holler, and I was starting to worry that my night would be canceled. As soon as Mom unlocked the door, I ran straight upstairs to my room, flipped on my radio, and heard Barefoot Nellie say that the snow had stopped in downtown Whitesburg and the Bluegrass Express live show with Mr. Larry Sparks was still on. Talk about a relief.
That's where you're going to meet some people that might want to put a band together.
Later that night, when everyone was seated and the coziness of the small theater surrounded us in the stage, my heart pounded with excitement as they introduced the soul and bluegrass music.
Welcome to the Apple Shop Theater in downtown Whitesburg, Kentucky. Our great show for you tonight here is Willard Hall.
All right, thank you, Jim.
Word.
It's always a pleasure to get up here and introduce the bands. I've been knowing this fella for a lot of years, ever since he first started with Ralph Stanley, and I've sat and watched him play that guitar for hours on end. And you can tell by the way he plays that he learned good. Ain't never practiced. Yeah, okay. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we're proud to have him here tonight. How about giving Larry Sparks and the Lonesome Ramblers a real nice hot
bluegrass music is an absolutely the most magical kind of music in the world, and there are a lot of reasons why I feel that way. Number one, I was raised on it. Mainly, it's the only real American music left that hasn't been terribly torn apart. And I think that people hunger for things in life that brings them back to their childhood, and I think that bluegrass music is the only music out there that actually can do that for folks.
They'll be gone to someone else.
was Angie Hall, a DJ on the Bluegrass Express show at the local community radio station WMMT in Whitesburg. Bluegrass music fans are a die-hard bunch of people, but there aren't too many teenage fans like me. My name is Amanda Begley, and I am a 16-year-old bluegrass-loving girl. Here in the Appalachian Mountains of southeastern Kentucky, bluegrass music is a part of everyone's lives whether they feel it is or not. When you turn on the radio, it's everywhere. This music really tells our stories of living in the mountains. I wanted to find out what makes people connect so fiercely to this music and what makes them love it so much. Here is the local music store owner, Clyde Stanley, followed by bluegrass artist Larry Sparks.
Here in the mountains, it's our heritage. I think traditional music in the Appalachian Mountains, or Appalachian Mountains, I like to say, is the home place, you know, of bluegrass music.
I guess I just like the music, and, you know, I like the sound of it, like the pureness and the realness of it. It's been a good effect for me, you know, when I look over what I've done up till now, and it's been good, and I would do it again.
I can see my grandpa working in the fields in the days before they had rubber on the wheels. Oh, so much has changed since then, there's too much going on. Years like pinwheels in the wind, they spin and then they're gone. Grandpa was a country man, he saw things with his heart. He could take a tall oak tree and turn it into art. Now those days have passed us by, storm clouds gather dark. Other hands have crossed the land where once her farm did start.
It's changed too much, you know. The people is too fast-paced, and everybody's in a hurry, 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 you know. They just need to, people need to slow down. And, you know, there's a lot more people now in the world than there was a few years ago, and I understand that, and I understand we can't live in the past. And always treasure and appreciate the past. But it's nice to see people that, you know, appreciate life.
What I find so special and sacred about bluegrass music, especially in this song, is the stories that you hear. Here's Angie again.
It's about real people and real life, and it's about things that I can relate to. It brings me back, takes me back to my childhood. It reminds me of things that I've heard my granny and grandpa talk about, or things my mommy and daddy talked about, and it's just a real music. I mean, we're living in an era now that some of our last pioneers in bluegrass still exist. So I think that we've fell in love with bluegrass music in a special time, you know, when it was real and unchanged, and I love that.
At school, not too many of my friends care for bluegrass music. This is what they had to say when I asked them about it.
I think bluegrass music is okay, but I don't really listen to it, but my grandpa does, but it's okay.
It's about our tradition, our heritage.
Good. Better than other stuff I usually listen to.
I just view it as like traditional music and like the traditions of the mountains. And I really get offended whenever we get labeled as like hillbillies, because we're not.
Angie was telling me not to worry too much about what my friends think about bluegrass, because even if they don't like it now, I know they'll come to like it later in life.
When I was in high school, I would have people that would make fun of me because I had such a love for the music. But I kept on keeping on because, I mean, that is very important. And I see so many of those people at bluegrass shows now, even come to my show, that used to point their finger and laugh at me. Because, you know, that's real life music, and I think that people sometime in their life go to it.
Bluegrass isn't just a type of music that I listen to. It's a part of my life. Anyone can sing words without meaning, but in bluegrass, we make the words have soul, feeling, and memories that remind us of our home here in the mountains. I think that some choose to make it a part of their life in their younger years like me, and others don't come to it until later.
When everything's getting heavy and there's too much on my mind, that's the time I take a walk up on the timberline. Think about the good old days that we've left behind. Sit among the silence of the deep woods and the pines.
I'm drifting into deep water. I'm starting to.
That's it for this episode of Mountain News. Music on this episode is Marion Sumner with a song called Deep Water from Appleshop's own Juneapple Records. If you'd like to hear this or previous episodes again, you can find them on our website, WMMT.org, or download Mountain News as a podcast from SoundCloud or Stitcher. I've been your host, Caroline Rubens, and from all of us at WMMT, thanks for listening to Real People Radio.
Can't we still be between right and wrong. My love is true as deep water. Your love won't last as long. Where will it lead me and where will it end? I can't help but wish I only knew. I'm winding up in deep water, so deep in love with you. I can't help but wish I only knew. I'm winding up in deep water, so deep in love with you.
This has been Mountain News and World Report, a production of WMMT-FM, Mountain Community Public Radio, the non-commercial broadcast service of the world-famous Apple Shop in Whitesburg, Kentucky.